So Colossians chapter 1, reading from verse 9 to verse 14. For this reason, since the day we heard about you, we have not stopped praying for you. We continually ask God to fill you with the knowledge of His will through all the wisdom and understanding that the Spirit gives, so that you may live a life worthy of the Lord and please Him in every way, bearing fruit in every good work, growing in the knowledge of God, being strengthened with all power according to His glorious might, so that you may have great endurance and patience, and giving joyful thanks to the Father, who has qualified you to share in the inheritance of His holy people in the kingdom of light. For He has rescued us from the dominion of darkness and brought us into the kingdom of the Son He loves, in whom we have redemption, the forgiveness of sins. We thank God for this reading. So, last week we began a series of reflections on Colossians, Jesus, Lord of the cosmos. And something of what we learnt last week is that we have mention of another man, Epaphras. It's there in verse 7. Epaphras, we learned, was from Colossae. And the chances are that the Colossian church, this small group of believers who have now gathered together and are regularly praying together, reflecting on the words of Jesus and singing hymns of worship together, they were encouraged into this faith by Epaphras. There's very little that we know about him. But Epaphras was the one who started it all off. And we recognize that we all have different roles. We don't all do the same thing. Epaphras had that particular role. He was caught, as it were, on fire by this news, this good news about Jesus and what had happened to Jesus, his life, his death, his resurrection, his ascension to heaven. And he has begun to tell his neighbors, his work colleagues, his friends in Colossae. And that some of them have responded. And that was his role, Epaphras. That was his role to do that. But now it appears he's travelled, we think, about 100 miles to Ephesus to see Paul. Paul is in prison for his faith, and it's not long before Epaphras is in prison with him for his faith. And it appears that what Epaphras has done is has told Paul all about this small group of believers to say to him, Paul, you shared the good news about Jesus with me. I went home and told my friends and neighbors, and they've responded. Now, Paul, you're the teacher. That's not who I am, says Epaphras. You're the teacher. Now, can you write a letter of encouragement to the small group of believers? And so Paul does that. And what we discover is it's more than simply encouraging them. As we read through this letter, they're up against it, this small group of believers. There are those in the city, in the town of Colossae, who are against them and constantly niggling away at them to try and get them to turn away from their faith. And that's what we discover. So Paul writes this letter, it seems possibly on the bidding of Epaphras, in order to encourage this small group of believers. And I've entitled it today, Set Free to Live. Paul is drawing together everything that the church in Colossae is believing. And he's laying it out for them. And here he's saying to them, you were set free in order that you may live. We could extend that and say, you were set free in order that you may live free. Set free in order that you may live free. And this very first point I want to put up is be free. And I'm going to begin at the end of the passage, verse 13 and 14. For he rescued us from the dominion of darkness and brought us into the kingdom of the Son he loves, in whom we have redemption, the forgiveness of sins. And here the Apostle Paul sums up the gospel. This is what God has done for you. He has set you free. And the word is, he has rescued you from the dominion of darkness. Now that sounds great. You've been rescued from the dominion or the kingdom of darkness. What does that mean? That you've been rescued. The chances are, when that is applied to us, and when it is said of us that we have been rescued in our day and age, it may well be that we never knew that we needed to be rescued from what we've been rescued from. We never knew. It may be that we respond to the love of God, and we are so struck and caught by the fact that we are loved by with an everlasting God, and we're so caught up in all that God has done for us in Jesus, that we respond. And then transformation begins to happen in our lives. Then somebody says to us, do you know what's happened to you? What's happened to you is you've been rescued. You've been set free from some of the things you never even knew were holding you. What are those things that the good news about Jesus sets us free from? Now we could have a great list. If we turn over the page in Colossians, we begin to get a bit of a clue as to what the Apostle Paul might have in mind. Chapter 3, verse 5. Put to death, therefore, whatever belongs to your earthly nature. Have you got that? Sexual immorality, impurity, lust, evil desires, and greed, which is idolatry. And then verse 8, you must also rid yourselves of all such things as these: anger, rage, malice, slander, filthy language from your lips. Do not lie to one another. And so the Apostle Paul there lists some of the things that people have been set free from. These are some of the things that they've been rescued from. And they might say, I didn't even know I needed to be rescued from these things. They were so normal to me. They were so part of my life. I thought that's how everybody lived all the time. But Paul says you've been rescued from these things. And he describes it as the dominion of darkness. Now these are very personal things, characteristics of our lives and behaviours of our lives. But they're also relational things and community things. They are things that affect us as individuals, but they're also things that affect us as a community together as we seek to live together. But we could take this a little bit further and say, what is it that we need to be set free from? Perhaps some of the things that we treat as just so normal to our lives, we don't even know that we need to be set free from them. I've mentioned before that I think one of the calls that the church needs to increasingly communicate is that we need to reject consumerism. That we always need the latest thing. We need to reject the lie of consumerism, that fulfillment and happiness is found in consuming. We need to reject the lie of militarism, the belief that our safety and our protection comes by having a greater army than our neighbours. Now these are things you might say, but you know, how are we going to live if we don't consume? What's going to happen to the economy? What about our safety? But I believe these are things that the Bible specifically will say to us. You need to reject consumerism. You need to be set free from it. You need to be set free from this belief in militarism, the idea that we are protected by going to war. And, you know, we should be horrified by what governments are doing in Iran or Syria or the Yemen. So many different situations. But thirdly, we need to reject, and I'm never sure how to put it, but economism, you know, this belief in money. This belief in money. We need to reject the idea that you are more if you have more money. And that is a lie. And we need to reject it. And yet, we are all brought up with this, and we treat it as completely normal. I must earn more. I must earn more. You know, that's, I love the saying, how much is enough? Do you know what the answer is? Just a little bit more. Just a little bit more. It says so much. But as a church, so there are very individualistic, individual things that we are, need to be set free from, that we would regard, or the Apostle Paul, I think, would regard as the dominion of darkness, that he lists in a little while later in this letter. They are personal things that affect us and are bad for us, and we need to be set free from those attitudes and those behaviours. But we need to be set free from them as well, because they affect the community as well and the way that we engage with others. But there are bigger things in terms of society and culture that we can treat as completely normal, and we need to reject those as well, and we need to be set free from the grip also of those things. For he has rescued us from the dominion of darkness. Now, the second thing is be forgiven. We need to be free. We need to live free from those things that have had a grip upon us. And say, I no longer have to serve the gods of those things. We also need to be forgiven. Verse 14, in whom we have redemption, the forgiveness of sins. You are forgiven. You are forgiven. Why does God forgive you? Because he loves you. Why does God forgive you? Because he loves you. There is no calculation that has to go on. God forgives you because he loves you. To be forgiven is to have shame removed from us. Shame for the things that we have done. Shame for the people that we have been. Shame for the things that we have said. For the relationships that we have damaged. We are forgiven. We are forgiven. That doesn't mean to say that there's not repair that we have to do in terms of relationships and so on. But I've deliberately put this as be forgiven. Live in that forgiveness. Be forgiven. We are forgiven. Okay. Third one. Be transformed. Be transformed. Going back. So, at the end, verses 13 and 14, where the Apostle Paul writes, he's rescued us from the dominion of darkness, brought us into the kingdom of the Son he loves, in whom we have redemption, the forgiveness of sins. That's the Apostle Paul summing up, this is what has happened to you. You've believed, but this is it. In a nutshell, what has happened to you. He's set you free. He's forgiven you. Now, the encouragement is at the beginning of this section. Verse 10. So that you may live a life worthy of the Lord and please him in every way. So the Apostle Paul begins this section saying, you know, every day, since the day we heard about you, we've not stopped praying for you. We continually ask God to forgive, to fill you with the knowledge of his will through all the wisdom and understanding that the Spirit gives, so that you may live a life worthy of the Lord and please him in every way. And this is the be transformed. This is the be transformed. Naturally, we don't live a life pleasing to God naturally. And you say, why don't we naturally live a life pleasing to God? We could. But because of the way we're brought up, within our culture and within our society, we are led to believe that there are other values that we should live by. There is a way of living and behaving that is the right way. And so the Apostle Paul says, you've believed in Jesus, you're trusting in God. This is what God has done. He's set you free, he's forgiven you. Now, be transformed. Live a transformed, changed life. So it's thinking, okay, if I'm going to step away from consumerism, how then should I live? It's a great question. If I'm not going to buy the latest thing, how then should I live? If I'm not going to be seduced by this idea of the military and war and so on, then how do I respond to my international neighbours? It's a great question. What has being transformed look like? If I'm not going to be seduced by the lie of, I've called economism, and the love of money, and more money means I'm better or more satisfied or whatever it is, if I'm not seduced by that anymore, how would I live? Certainly, these are deeply searching, I find them deeply searching questions. Because if I'm not going to be a consumer, how simply could I live? If I'm not going to live a life worshipping at the altar of the God of money, how simply could I live? What would I do with my money? Are we getting this? Or is this too close to home? You know. But that's what the Apostle Paul is saying. Live a life worthy. If I'm not going to be seduced by this idea that we've got to have a strong army and we've got to have the latest missiles and it's going to be sorted out by war, and instead we say, no, Jesus is the Prince of Peace, how do I approach my politics? And you suddenly find it's transformative. What we treat as normal, it just begins to shake everything. And so that's the encouragement of the Apostle Paul. Live a life worthy of the Lord and please him in every way. Now the fourth thing is be strong. Now this is, I'm actually jumping on to verse 11. Being strengthened with all power, according to his glorious might. How are we going to live that life? How are we going to live that life that is a transformed life? How are we going to live that life that is no longer the life we used to live? Well, we need to be strong. We need to be strong. You know, to be encouraged is to give courage or to give strength. That's what we need. Be strengthened. And what does the Apostle Paul write? Being strengthened with all power according to his glorious might. What is God's glorious might? What does God's power look like? What is this strength of God that the Apostle Paul is referring to here? And the strongest strength of God, if I can put it like that, is his love. That is his strength. He has no power other than his love. And that's an extraordinary thought. But that is God's strength. That is God's power. That is God's might. Is in his love. And so the Apostle Paul encourages us be strong, being strengthened with all power. How are we going to live that transformed life? Well, God, you know what? I'm not sure I can do it. So fill me with your love. Strengthen me with your love. Show me what love can do. I'll start with the small things, because I'm not sure I can do the transformation all at once. Help me to see what love looks like in the simple things. Rejecting an old way and seeking to work out what it means to live that transformed life. What does love look like? What does God's love look like? In all sorts of ways, whether it's about the consuming or the relationship with others internationally, or whether it's about money. What does love look like? The Apostle Paul says, being strengthened with all power. God's power. Be strong in his love. Next one. Be fruitful. Be fruitful. And this is nipping back to midway through verse 10. So you may live a life worthy of the Lord, please him in every way, bearing fruit in every good work, growing in the knowledge of God. Bearing fruit in every good work. Now, if you turn over again, back to chapter 3, if you go back to chapter 3, verse 12, therefore, as God's chosen people, holy and dearly loved, clothe yourself with compassion, kindness, humility, gentleness, patience, bear with each other, forgive one another if any of you has a grievance against someone. Now, what does that sound like? Fruit of the Spirit. Well done. Yeah. Galatians chapter 5, verses 22 and 23. Galatia, of course, is not far from Colossae. Sounds very familiar. What does fruitfulness look like? Being fruitful. Well, it is about love, compassion, kindness, forgiveness, bearing with one another, listening to one another. That's the fruitfulness that is encouraged here. Being fruitful. What are the words? Bearing fruit in every good work. Bearing fruit in every good work. So it's not enough to say, I am loving, which is great. I am compassionate. You know, how would you describe yourself? How, you know, I'm loving, I'm compassionate, I'm forgiving, I'm patient. Being fruitful in every good work. I guess if we're in an interview situation, describe your character, and if we were to say, well, I'm compassionate, I'm loving, I'm forgiving, and so on and so on. The next question would be, okay, give me evidence. Give me an example. Because that's what the Apostle Paul is saying. Don't just take these on as characteristics and say, oh yes, I meditate and I'm more loving. Yeah, well, it's only shown in your actions, in every good work. So the Apostle Paul is encouraging them. Be transformed. And that's a deep thing. Be transformed. Be strong in love. But be fruitful. Bear fruit. Take those characteristics. I remember them better from Galatians 5. What are they? Love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, gentleness, faithfulness, and self-control. I think I got them all. Take them on. Put them into action in your life. Because as we are loving, so we plant a seed of love. As we are kind, so we plant a seed of kindness. As we are patient, we plant a seed of patience, and so on. And so there might be more growth and more fruit. So be fruitful in every good work. And then finally, be patient. Patient. So again, verse 11. Being strengthened with all power according to his glorious might, so that you may have great endurance and patience. Why is this here? Why is this call to great endurance and patience? Well, if we go back to the beginning, be free. That's the declaration. Be free. This is what God has done for you. Be forgiven for all that you have done and everything you have been. You are forgiven. Now here's the encouragement. Be transformed. Don't live like you used to live. Take on the values of the kingdom of Jesus instead of the kingdom that you are surrounded by and you live in. Be transformed. Be strong in love. Be fruitful. Guess what's going to happen if you start to do that? People will oppose you. That's the reality. If you insist on love, if you insist on kindness, if you step in when you see other people not being generous or patient, and you want to encourage there's a better way to live, soon there's opposition. And so the Apostle Paul, recognizing this is the trajectory of somebody who follows Jesus, you will need to be patient. Not only patient, but you may have great endurance. That's a strong word. You may have great endurance. You may be able to stick at what God has called you to. But that's all. With all that fruit of the Spirit, you may be able to stick at what you've been called to. So here we have this encouragement. You've been set free to live. Set free to live free. Breaking the bonds that once held us and living a life of newness. It may sound simple, but it's not. And sometimes people say to me, "Ed, well, it was great what you said this morning, but you've said it before." I know I've said it before. And I'll keep saying it. And I'll keep saying it. And I'll keep saying it. And in part, I'm saying it to myself. In part, I'm saying it to myself. But I know that we need to hear it again and again and again. It's not just about head knowledge. It is about that. But it's about transformed lives. And if we hear it enough, my prayer is that it will make a journey from our heads into our hands and our feet and our attitudes, that we might know the loving correction of God, that call from God, don't live like this. There is a better way to live. You've been set free to live free. So let's pause there. May the grace of God surround each one of us. The undeserved favor of God surround us. May the grace of God disturb us. May the grace of God encourage us. Amen. So we take the word.